Dr. Bredsdorf, real one?
Yes.
Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in Denmark, in Roskilde, an old cathedral town, well known now for the Viking Ship Museum, and also for the cathedral, which is the bearing place of, most of the Danish kings.
What did your father do for a living?
He was headmaster of a college, an adult college, folk high school, a Danish folk high school in or near Roskilde. He started it in 1907. I was born in 1912 and lived in Roskilde and went to school there.
How did your education then progress?
Well, I finished school and matriculated in 1930, came to Copenhagen University, studied English and Danish, Nordic literature, and took my final degree there in 1938, and then while I was doing that, I was engaged also in various kinds of political activity, especially sort of anti-Nazi activity. I was very much concerned in the 30s about the danger of German fascism and the danger that Denmark was threatened from Hitler and the ideology there, and I felt very strongly about this, and for a time I became a member of the Danish Communist Party, but I left it later on in 1939, and it was a time of the Hitler, the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact, and also the time when the Soviet Union attacked Finland, the Finland War, and this I couldn't stomach, so I left the Communist Party.
Which year had you joined the Danish Communist Party?
In 32.
And was it there some particular individual who influenced you, or some particular literature which influenced you?
It was mainly that I thought that the parties, which should have been, ought to have been, the most active in fighting Nazism, were the Social Democrats and the Radical or Liberal Party, whatever you like to call it. It's called itself the Radical Left. But they were members of the government. In fact, they formed the government, and that made them so cautious and scared of Nazi Germany that it was, I felt that the only political party which really stood for a clear opposition was the Communist Party. That was my reason, more than any single person. Of course, I was influenced by the environment I came into among young socialists and older socialists also, and I believed in socialism. In fact, I still do, but that's not here. I mean, not that kind of socialism which was developed in the Soviet Union.
In Britain at this time, the communists were active on the streets in fighting what in Britain were called black shirts.
Yes.
Was there something of the same thing in Denmark with street violence?
Yes, but not to the same extent. I experienced that in Britain also. Of course, I was in Britain as a student in 1934. But in Denmark, there were, of course, Nazi movements, and there were demonstrations and street fights, not of the same magnitude as in London, for instance. and not with the same racist undertones or overtones, in fact, as it was in Britain. But there was not one black shirt movement. There were several Nazi or fascist movements competing against each other, and that really split them up. And when it came to the occupation of Denmark, it turned out that Hitler couldn't use any of them. They weren't any good. I mean, there was nothing like in Norway, where they had one Nazi leader who was useful to the Germans. The Danish Nazis weren't considered by the occupying power, when it came to the point, to be useful enough for them.
So you didn't have events in Denmark like the famous Cable Street battle in Britain, or the famous meetings that Oswald Mosley had, in which there was violence between his black shirts and the left?
No, I was there at the Olympia meeting in London, and I saw the brutality of the black shirts at that time. And I reported it, I wrote an article about it in the Danish press at that time. But we had nothing comparable to that. No one was able to gather so many people for the fascist cause as Sir Oswald Mosley was.
Were you thrown out of the Olympia meeting yourself?
No, I wasn't, because I didn't have the courage to stand up and demonstrate against it. But when I refused to get up when Mosley entered and sat my seat, I was very firmly told by some bystanders that I should get up or otherwise. So I obeyed. But without any Nazi greeting.
Had you gone with a group or as an individual?
As an individual.
Were you in contact with British communists?
Yes, I was. I had contact with, because at that time I was a member of the Danish Party and had introduction to the so I met various, I was accepted by the Communist Party. And met various of people, Harry Pollitt and others. I had contact with them in the same way as I was a member of a group in Denmark to help the victims of Nazism, German refugees who came to Denmark. The president or chairman that was a well-known Danish writer called Martin Andersen Nexø. So when I came to England and came to London in 1934, there was a committee of a similar kind. It was really a branch of the same thing, a committee established by Einstein and others, and the head of the British committee was a man called Lord Marley. I don't know whether the name rings a bell with you. Well, anyway, he was the head of this British group to help refugees smuggle out Jews from Germany and help them. And at their, I was invited to attend at their annual conference, and I was asked to sort of at the platform to bring a fraternal greeting from Denmark from the Danish Committee, not the Danish Communist Party, but the Danish Committee, the British Committee to help refugees from Germany. There was an incident where an old rabbi had been smuggled out of Germany in a rolled-up carpet, and he was brought in now, and there was a great, it was a sort of a sensation to see this man who had managed to escape, but he was too ill to perform. But I remember also afterwards there were members of the press, the Times and the Guardian and others, who asked about my name, and I had been advised not to give my real name, but call myself Mr. Peterson, because I was an alien, and it would not be advisable for me to use my own name.
Did you hold any position in the Danish Communist Party?
No, I didn't. No, I was an undergraduate, and I was, for a time, I was president of the Socialist Students in Copenhagen University, but I didn't hold any party position, really. But I was very active in, a popular anti-fascist movement which brought in anti-fascists of every color, social democrats, radicals, non-party members, and so on, which was called the Danish Kulturkamp, Danish Cultural Fight, I was secretary of that, and this was a broad political get together, and I spent much of my time and energy at that, it was started in 1935, and went on until 1939, when all forme populaire ceased to exist, because after the Molotov-Ribbentrop pact, there was no unified movement anymore. But I was active in that way, and that also resulted in, I was, as a student leader, I was invited to an international conference in Czechoslovakia. That was the time of Benes government. It was a Benes government really stood behind it. And I went there, and we discussed the situation of the Danube countries. And on my return, and this was in 37, to Denmark, I was arrested by the Gestapo in Warnemünde. I had come from Prague and came to the train by train from Berlin, but I had had two or three hours stay in Berlin because of time to change from one train to the other, and this was the boat train to Denmark, so to speak, to Warnemünde, and everybody on that boat train was going to Denmark. And there on my way, a German officer asked for my passport and held it up against a book, which I realized later was of people who were not allowed into Germany. And my name was on that list, and here I was on my way out of Germany. So there was great consternation, and I was not allowed to sail back, and I was taken to a Gestapo. Well, it was a flat, really. It said Müller on the door, and there I sat in an empty kitchen and waited. I won't go into detail about that because it's neither here nor there. But anyway, I was finally expelled from Germany for eternal Zeit, so for ewigen Zeit, as an unwanted person. And that was 1937.
About which month would that be?
In the summer, it must have been June, I would think, yes. Yes, I think it was in June.
When you left the Communist Party in 1939, yeah. Was there a big exodus from the Danish Communist Party because of those events you've mentioned?
Yes, there was a certain exodus, that's right. Not as big as one might have expected, because they were very eager to explain to people that the Hitler-Ribbentrop, the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact, was really to give the Soviet Union a respite, and it was not a friendly pact and so on. I couldn't stomach it.
Was that more a more important reason to you than the Finnish War?
No, the Finnish War was my main reason. I felt, and I stated that in my letter to the Communist Party, that although I didn't have any sympathy for the Finnish wood barons and pseudo-Nazis, I felt that introducing socialism by military means was an impossible, something I couldn't accept. So that was the real reason I left the party, and others did also.
Did they put pressure on you to stay in?
No. No, they didn't.
What happened?
But I was still on friendly terms with many of them, and I remember the chair of the party coming to me and saying, well, this is most extraordinary. You've written a letter in which I agree with 99% of what you say, and yet the conclusion is you leave the party. But there was sort of no animosity. I was not regarded as a traitor who left the party, because I didn't want to join another party.
Who was this chairman?
He was called Axel Larsen.
What kind of a man was he?
Well, he was a very clever spokesman for the party. He was a member of the Danish Folketing. He was probably, and I think that most people thought that he was the best speaker, spokesman altogether in the Danish Parliament. He later on, but that's much after the war, became the leader of a breakout party called the Socialist People's Party, which is now a fairly strong party in the Danish Folketing. But that was long after the war.
What happened to you between these late months of 1939 and the German invasion of April 1940?
I had finished my exams. I was now qualified, and I became a teacher at a training college in the south of Denmark in 1939. I was married, I had a son, we moved to a house in the south of Sjælland, Zealand, and lived there, and this was in 1939. I was employed from the 1st of August, and very soon after that, World War II broke out. But it was not, of course, that Denmark was occupied at that time, but the World War broke out. I was engaged also in various activities. For instance, there were efforts in the beginning of the war to establish a journal, a paper, which should go as far as possible without being banned in saying what we felt about the policy of the Danish. Well, now I'm speaking about, no, it's too early now because I'm speaking about the situation after Denmark was occupied. But I mean, I lived there until the 9th of April, 94, when the occupation came.
9th of April, 1940.
40. And I saw, I heard the planes coming in. I saw the parachutes coming down over one of the central bridges there, which connects Sjælland with the other islands. And at that time, I was worried because I had been told that I was an unwanted person in Germany, and I thought that I might have been arrested, but nothing happened. Nobody was arrested, in fact.
Had the invasion taken you completely by surprise?
No. Well, in the end, yes, but I mean, for a long time, this has been foreseen as a possibility. But when it came, I remember my reaction when I heard the planes, war planes, German war planes, and saw them. And my reaction was, they're on their way to Norway. Norway's being occupied. I didn't think at that time that it was Denmark, and it was Denmark as well. It was, of course, both Norway and Denmark. And then the difference between the two countries became very obvious because the Norwegians fought back. Denmark was defeated without, well, virtually any fight or minor fights, skirmishes. And Denmark was overrun by the German army. And it was obvious that we could not have done anything in a military way because Denmark was in such a position that Germany could do that with their military powers. I realized that, I mean, I went home that morning and said to the head of the college, I think I'd have to go back. Will you excuse me for a couple of hours? Because I had to hide away in the basement some material which might incriminate me. And one didn't know whether the Germans would be put up individually in houses, and that would be very unpleasant. That did not happen, of course. So we lived with the occupation, hated it, but had to accept it, and all that followed with it. To begin with, the reaction of the Danes was a kind of passive nationalism, simply singing Danish songs and so on, simply to strengthen the morale. I felt that more ought to be done, but I couldn't really. I mean, it was not an individual thing. And the Communists, of course, had accepted also. The Communist Party accepted the situation. They were not banned. They were not sent to prison until the night when Hitler occupied, sent troops into the into Soviet Russia. And then the Gestapo gave orders to the Danish police. The idea was still that the Danish administration should function, but they should do the dirty work of the Germans. And this was what we, I mean, we'd rather have clear-cut circumstances that the Germans arrested rather than that the Danish police were there on the pretext that they did this voluntarily. I was not arrested. The Germans brought a list of, I can't remember the name, but the number, but it was something like 50-odd Danish communists whom they wanted arrested. And the Social Democratic Prime Minister, Stauning, said, do whatever they ask. But in fact, they arrested about 300 people. They had a long list of communists. It was not, I mean, they did not take only the communists whom the Germans had on their list. So they took all I suppose because I was not a member anymore, I was not arrested myself. Several friends of mine were, of course, arrested and put into a camp. And the idea was that they were taken into custody to protect them from what the fate they might have had if the Germans had arrested them. In the end, of course, when on the 29th of August 1943, the whole system broke down because the Danish government refused to take orders from the Germans anymore, and there was no Danish government anymore, and the Germans took complete control of the situation. Then the Danish Minister of Justice, who had promised these people to let them free if the Germans took over, broke his promise, and half of them escaped, but half of the Germans didn't know the geography of the camp, and half of them were sent to German concentration camps, Dachau, and many of them perished there. They had been arrested under Danish orders and allegedly to be protected and ended up their lives in that way. But this is going far because we are now into the time of the resistance movement having opened. But I was saying there was a time, and I was a bit involved in it, well, in the early part of at the end of 41 and the early part January 42,